Chapter 47. More Tales of the Wheel. An itchy restlessness had Rand pacing beside the dining table. 12 strides. The table was exactly 12 strides long, no matter how many times he stepped it off. Irritably, he made himself stop keeping tally. Stupid thing to be doing. I don't care how long the bloody table is. A few minutes later, he discovered that he was counting the number of trips he made up the table and back. What is he saying to Moraine and Lan? Does he know why the Dark One is after us? Does he know which of us the Dark One wants? He glanced at his friends. Perrin had crumbled a piece of bread and was idly pushing the crumbs around on the table with one finger. His yellow eyes stared unblinking at the crumbs, but they seemed to see something far off. Matt slouched in his chair, eyes half closed, and the beginnings of a grin on his face. It was a nervous grin, not amusement. Outwardly, he looked like the old Matt, but from time to time, he unconsciously touched the Shadow Logoth dagger through his coat. What is Fane telling her? What does he know? Loyal, at least, did not look worried. The Ogier was studying the walls. First, he had stood in the middle of the room and stared, turning slowly in a circle. Now he was almost pressing his broad nose against the stone while he gently traced a particular joint with fingers thicker than most men's thumbs. Sometimes he closed his eyes as if the feeling was more important than seeing. His ears gave an occasional twitch, and he muttered to himself in Ogier, appearing to have forgotten anyone else was in the room with him. Lord Agomar stood talking quietly with Nynaeve and Egwene in front of the long fireplace at the end of the room. He was a good host, adept at making people forget their troubles. Several of his stories had Egwene in giggles. Once even Nynaeve threw back her head and roared with laughter. Rand gave a start at the unexpected sound and jumped again when Matt's chair crashed to the floor. "Blood and ashes," Matt growled, ignoring the way Nynaeve's mouth tightened at his language. "What is taking her so long?" He righted his chair and sat back down without looking at anyone. His hand strayed to his coat. The Lord of Fal'Dara looked at Matt disapprovingly. His gaze took in Rand and Perrin without any improvement, then turned back to the women. Rand's pacing had taken him close to them. "My lord," Egwene was saying, as glibly as if she had been using titles all of her life. "I thought he was a warder. But you call him Daishan, and talk about a golden crane banner, and so did those other men. Sometimes you sound almost as if he's a king. I remember once Moraine called him the last Lord of the Seven Towers. Who is he?" Nynaeve began studying her cup intently, but it was obvious to Rand that abruptly she was listening even more closely than was Egwene. Rand stopped and tried to overhear without seeming to eavesdrop.
"Lord of the Seven Towers," Agomar said with a frown. "An ancient title, Lady Egwene. Not even the High Lords of Tyr have older, though the Queen of Andor comes close." He heaved a sigh and shook his head. "He will not speak of it, yet the story is well known along the border. He is a king, or should have been. A Lan Mandragoran, Lord of the Seven Towers, Lord of the Lakes, Crownless King of the Malkyrie."
His shaven head lifted high, and there was a light in his eye as if he felt a father's pride. His voice grew stronger, filled with the force of his feeling. The whole room could hear without straining.
"We of Shinar call ourselves bordermen, but fewer than 50 years ago, Shinar was not truly of the borderlands. North of us, and of Arafel, was Malkyr. The lances of Shinar rode north, but it was Malkyr that held back the blight. Malkyr. Peace favor her memory and light illumine her name."
"Lan is from Malkyr," the wisdom said softly, looking up. She seemed troubled.
It was not a question, but Agomar nodded.
"Yes, Lady Nynaeve. He is the son of Al-Akir Mandragoran, last crowned king of the Malkyri. How did he become as he is? The beginning, perhaps, was Lane. On a dare, Lane Mandragoran, the king's brother, led his lances through the blight to the blasted lands, perhaps to Shale Ghul itself. Lane's wife, Brienne, made that dare for the envy that burned her heart, that Al-Akir had been raised to the throne instead of Lane. The king and Lane were as close as brothers could be, as close as twins even after the royal Al was added to Akir's name. But jealousy racked Brayan. Lane was acclaimed for his deeds, and rightfully so, but not even he could outshine Al-Akir. He was man and king, such as comes once in 100 years, if that. Peace favor him, and Eliana. Lane died in the blasted lands with most of those who followed him, men Malkir could ill afford to lose, and Brayan blamed the king, saying that Shael Ghul itself would have fallen if Al-Akir had led the rest of the Malkiri north with her husband. For revenge, she plotted with Cowan Gamalan, called Cowan Fairheart, to seize the throne for her son, Isam. Now Fairheart was a hero almost as well loved as Al-Akir himself, and one of the great lords. But when the great lords had cast the rods for king, only two separated him from Akir. And he never forgot that two men laying a different color on the crowning stone would have set him on the throne instead. Between them, Cowan and Brayan moved soldiers back from the Blight to seize the Seven Towers, stripping the border forts to bare garrisons. But Cowan's jealousy ran deeper. Disgust tinged Aglamar's voice. Fairheart the hero, whose exploits in the Blight were sung throughout the borderlands, was a dark friend. With the border forts weakened, Trollocs poured into Malkir like a flood. King Al-Akir and Lane together might have rallied the land. They had done so before, but Lane's doom in the blasted lands had shaken the people, and the Trolloc invasion broke men's spirit and their will to resist. Too many men. Overwhelming numbers pushed the Malkiri back into the heartland. Brayan fled with her infant son Isam and was run down by Trollocs as she rode south with him. No one knows their fate of a certainty, but it can be guessed. I can find pity only for the boy. When Cowan Fairheart's treachery was revealed and he was taken by young Jaehn Charin, already called Jaehn Farstrider, when Fairheart was brought to the Seven Towers in chains, the great lords called for his head on a pike. But because he had been second only to Al-Akir and Lane in the hearts of the people, the king faced him in single combat and slew him. Al-Akir wept when he killed Cowan. Some say he wept for a friend who had given himself to the shadow, and some say for Malkir. The Lord of Faldara shook his head sadly. The first peal of the doom of the Seven Towers had been struck. There was no time to gather aid from Shinar or Arafel, and no hope that Malkir could stand alone with 5,000 of her lances dead in the blasted lands, her border forts overrun. Al-Akir and his queen, Eliana, had land brought to them in his cradle. Into his infant hands they placed the sword of Malkiri kings, the sword he wears today. A weapon made by Aes Sedai during the War of Power, the War of the Shadow that brought down the Age of Legends. They anointed his head with oil, naming him Daishan, a diademed battle lord, and they consecrated him as the next king of the Malkiri, and in his name they swore the ancient oath of Malkiri kings and queens. Aglamar's face hardened, and he spoke the words as if he too had sworn that oath, or one much similar. To stand against the shadow so long as iron is hard and stone abides. To defend the Malkiri while one drop of blood remains. To avenge what cannot be defended. The words rang in the chamber. Eliana placed a locket around her son's neck for remembrance, and the infant, wrapped in swaddling clothes by the queen's own hand, was given over to 20 chosen from the king's bodyguard. The best swordsmen, the most deadly fighters. Their command, to carry the child to Falmorin. Then did Al-Akir and Eliana lead the Malkiri out to face the shadow one last time. There they died at Herod's Crossing, and the Malkiri died, and the Seven Towers were broken. Shinar and Arafel and Kandor, met the half-men and the Trollocs at the Stair of Jahan, and threw them back, but not as far as they had been. Most of the Malkir remained in Trolloc hands, and year by year, mile by mile, the Blight has swallowed it. Agilmar drew a heavy-hearted breath. When he went on, there was a sad pride in his eyes and voice. Only 5 of the bodyguards reached Falmorn alive, every man wounded, but they had the child unharmed. From the cradle they taught him all they knew. He learned weapons as other children learned toys, and the Blight as other children their mother's garden. The oath sworn over his cradle is graven in his mind. There is nothing left to defend, but he can avenge. He denies his titles, yet in the Borderlands he is called the Uncrowned. And if ever he raised the Golden Crane of Malkir, an army would come to follow. But he will not lead men to their deaths. In the Blight he courts death as a suitor courts a maiden, but he will not lead others to it. If you must enter the Blight, and with only a few, there is no man better to take you there, nor to bring you safely out again. He is the best of the warders, and that means the best of the best. You might as well leave these boys here to gain a little seasoning and put your entire trust in Lan. The Blight is no place for untried boys. Matt opened his mouth and shut it again at a look from Rand. I wish he'd learned to keep it shut. Nynaeve had listened just as wide-eyed as Egwene, but now she was staring into her cup again, her face pale. Egwene put a hand on her arm and gave her a sympathetic look. Moraine appeared in the doorway, Lan at her heels. Nynaeve turned her back on them.
What did he say? Rand demanded.
Matt rose, and Perrin too.
Country oaf,
Agilmar muttered, then raised his voice to a normal tone.
Did you learn anything, Aes Sedai, or is he simply a madman?
He is mad, Moraine said, or close to it. But there is nothing simple about Padan Fain.
One of the black and gold liveried servants bowed his way in with a blue wash basin and pitcher, a bar of yellow soap and a small towel on a silver tray. He looked anxiously at Agilmar. Moraine directed him to put them on the table.
Your pardon for commanding your servants, Lord Agilmar, she said. I took the liberty of asking for this.
Agilmar nodded to the servant, who put the tray on the table and left hurriedly.
My servants are yours to command, Aes Sedai.
The water Moraine poured into the basin steamed as if only just off the boil. She pushed up her sleeves and began vigorously washing her hands without regard for the heat of the water.
I said he was worse than vile, but I did not come close. I do not believe I have ever met someone so abject and debased, yet at the same time so foul. I feel soiled from touching him, and I do not mean for the filth on his skin. Soiled in here.
She touched her breast.
The degradation of his soul almost makes me doubt he has one. There is something worse to him than a dark friend.
He looked so pitiful, Egwene murmured. I remember him arriving in Emmon's Field each spring, always laughing and full of news from outside. Surely there's some hope for him. No man can stand in the shadow so long that he cannot find the light again, she quoted.
The Aes Sedai tiled her hands briskly.
I have always believed it so, she said. Perhaps Padan Fain can be redeemed. But he has been a dark friend more than 40 years. And what he has done for that, in blood and pain and death, would freeze your heart to hear. Among the least of these, though not small to you, I suspect, he brought the Trollocs to Emmon's Field.
Yes, Rand said softly.
He heard Egwene gasp.
I should have guessed. Burn me, I should have, as soon as I recognized him.
Did he bring any here? Matt asked. He looked at the stone walls around them and shivered. Rand thought he was remembering the Murdral more than Trollocs. Walls had not stopped the fate at Bearlawn or at Whitebridge.
If he did, Agilmar laughed, they'll break their teeth on the walls of Faldara.
Many others have before. He was speaking to everyone, but obviously addressing his words to Egwene and Nynaeve from the glances he gave them.
And do not worry yourself about half-men either.
Matt's face reddened.
Every street and alley in Faldara is lit by night, and no man may hide his face inside the walls.
Why would Master Fane do that?
Egwene asked.
3 years ago.
With a heavy sigh, Moraine sat down, folding up as if what she had done with Fane had drained her.
3 years this summer, as far back as that. The light surely favors us, else the Father of Lies would have triumphed while I still sat planning in Tarvalen. 3 years, Fane has been hunting you for the Dark One.
That's crazy, Rand said. He's coming to the Two Rivers every spring as regular as a clock.
3 years?
We've been right there in front of him, and he never looked at any of us twice before last year.
The Aes Sedai pointed a finger at him, fixing him.
Fane told me everything, Rand, or almost everything. I believe he managed to hold back something, something important despite all I could do. But he said enough. 3 years ago, a half-man came for him in a town in Murrindy. Fane was terrified, of course. But it is considered a very great honor among Dark Friends to be so summoned. Fane believed he had been chosen for great things, and he had, though not in the manner he believed. He was brought north to the Blight, to the Blasted Lands, to Sheol Ghul, where he met a man with eyes of fire who named himself Baalzamun.
Matt shifted uneasily, and Rand swallowed hard. It had to have been that way, of course, but that did not make it any easier to accept. Only Perrin looked at the Aes Sedai as if nothing could surprise him any longer.
The light protect us, Agamar said fervently.
Fane did not like what was done to him at Sheol Ghul, Moraine continued calmly. While we talked, he screamed often of fire and burning. It almost killed him, bringing it all out from where he had it hidden. Even with my healing, he is a shattered ruin. It will take much to make him whole again. I will make the effort, though, if for no other reason than to learn what more he still hides. He had been chosen because of where he did his peddling. No, she said quickly, when they stirred. Not the Two Rivers only, not then. The Father of Lies knew roughly where to find what he sought, but not much better than we in Tarvalen. Fane said he has been made the Dark One's hound, and in a way he is right. The Father of Lies set Fane to hunt, first changing him so he could carry out that hunt. It is the things done to bring about those changes that Fane fears to remember. He hates his master for them as much as he fears him. So Fane was sent sniffing and hunting through all the villages around Berlon, and all the way to the Mountains of Mist, and down to Tarin, and across into the Two Rivers.
3 springs ago, Perrin said slowly.
I remember that spring.
Fane came later than usual, but what was strange was that he lingered on. A whole week he remained, idle and gnashing his teeth about laying out money for a room at the Wine Spring Inn. Fane likes his money.
I remember now, Matt said. Everybody was wondering, was he sick, or had he fallen for a local woman? Not that any of them would marry a peddler, of course. As well marry one of the traveling people.
Egwene raised an eyebrow at him, and he shut his mouth.
After that, Fane was taken to Sheol Ghul again, and his mind was distilled.
Rand's stomach turned over at the tone in the Aes Sedai's voice. It told more of what she meant than the grimace that flashed across her face.
What he had sensed was concentrated and fed back. When he entered the Two Rivers the next year, he was able to choose his targets out more clearly. Indeed, more clearly even than the Dark One had expected. Fane knew for a certainty that the one he sought was one of 3 in Emmons Field.
Perrin grunted, and Matt began cursing in a soft monotone that even Nynaeve's glare did not stop. Agamar looked at them curiously. Rand felt only the faintest chill and wondered at it.
3 years the Dark One had been hunting him. Hunting them.
He was sure it should have made his teeth chatter. Moraine did not allow Matt to interrupt her. She raised her voice enough to be heard over him.
When Fane returned to Lugard, Baalzamun came to him in a dream. Fane abased himself and performed rites that would strike you deaf to hear the half of them, binding himself even more tightly to the Dark One. What is done in dreams can be more dangerous than what is done awake.
Rand stirred at the sharp warning look, but she did not pause.
He was promised great rewards, power over kingdoms after Baalzamon's victory, and told that when he returned to Emmon's field, he was to mark the three he had found. A halfman would be there, waiting for him with Trollocs. We know now how the Trollocs came to the two rivers. There must have been an Ogier grove and a waygate at Manetherin.
The most beautiful of all, Loyal said, except for Tavalin.
He had been listening as intently as everyone else.
Manetherin is remembered fondly by the Ogier.
Agomar formed the name silently, his eyebrows raised in wonder. Manetherin.
Lord Agomar, Moraine said, I will tell you how to find the waygate of Mafal de Daranel. It must be walled up and a guard set, and none allowed near. The halfmen have not learned all of the ways yet, but that waygate is to the south and only hours from Faldara.
The Lord of Faldara gave himself a shake as if he were coming out of a trance.
South? Peace, we don't need that. The light shine on us. It shall be done.
Did Fain follow us through the ways? Perrin asked.
He must have done.
Moraine nodded.
Fain would follow you three into the grave because he must. When the Murdral failed at Emmon's field, it brought Fain with the Trollocs on our trail. The Fade would not let Fain ride with him, although he thought he should have the best horse in the two rivers and ride at the head of the band. The Murdral forced him to run with the Trollocs, and the Trollocs to carry him when his feet gave out. They talked so that he could understand, arguing about the best way to cook him when his usefulness was done. Fain claims he turned against the Dark One before they reached the Tarin. But sometimes his greed for his promised rewards seeps into the open. When we had escaped across the Tarin, the Murdral took the Trollocs back to the closest waygate in the Mountains of Mist and sent Fain across alone. He thought he was free then, but before he reached Baerlon, another Fade found him, and that one was not so kind. It made him sleep doubled up on himself in a Trolloc kettle at night to remind him of the price of failure. That one used him as far as Shadar Logoth. By then, Fain was willing to give the Murdral his mother if it would free him, but the Dark One never willingly loosens a hold he has gained. What I did there, sending an illusion of our tracks and smell off toward the mountains, fooled the Murdral, but not Fain. The Halfmen did not believe him. Afterward, they dragged him behind them on a leash. Only when we seemed to keep always just ahead, no matter how hard they pressed, did some begin to credit him. Those were the four who returned to Shadar Logoth. Fain claims it was Baalzamon himself who drove the Murdral.
Agomar shook his head contemptuously.
The Dark One? Pah! The man's lying or mad. If Heartsbane were loose, we'd all of us be dead by now, or worse.
Fain spoke the truth as he saw it, Moraine said. He could not lie to me, though he hid much. His words. Baalzamon appeared like a flickering candle flame, vanishing and reappearing, never in the same place twice. His eyes seared the Murdral, and the fires of his mouth scourged us.
Something, Lan said, drove four Fades to where they feared to go. A place they fear almost as much as they fear the wrath of the Dark One.
Agomar grunted as if he had been kicked. He looked sick.
It was evil against evil in the ruins of Shadar Logoth, Moraine continued. Foul fighting vile. When Fain spoke of it, his teeth chattered and he whimpered. Many Trollocs were slain, consumed by Mashadar and other things, including the Trolloc that held Fain's leash. He fled the city as if it were the pit of doom at Shael Ghul. Fain believed he was free at last. He intended to run until Baalzamon could never find him again, to the ends of the earth if necessary. Imagine his horror when he discovered that the compulsion to hunt did not lessen. Instead, it grew stronger and sharper with every day that passed. He could not eat except what he could scavenge while he hunted you. Beetles and lizards snatched while he ran. Half-rotten refuse dug from midden heaps in the dark of night. Nor could he stop until exhaustion collapsed him like an empty sack. And as soon as he had strength to stand again, he was driven on. By the time he reached Camelin, he could feel his quarry even when it was a mile away. Here in the cells below, he would sometimes look up without realizing what he was doing.
He was looking in the direction of this room. Rand had a sudden itch between his shoulder blades. It was as if he could feel Fane's eyes on him then, through the intervening stone. The Aes Sedai noticed his uneasy shrug, but she went on implacably. If Fane was half mad by the time he reached Camelin, he sank even further when he realized that only two of those he sought were there. He was compelled to find all of you, but he could do no other than follow the two who were there either. He spoke of screaming when the waygate opened in Camelin. The knowledge of how to do it was in his mind. He does not know how it came there. His hands moved of their own accord, burning with the fires of Baalzamun when he tried to stop them. The owner of the shop, who came to investigate the noise, Fane murdered. Not because he had to, but out of envy that the man could walk freely out of the cellar while his feet carried him inexorably into the ways.
Then Fane was the one you sensed following us, Egwene said.
Lan nodded.
How did he escape the black wind?
Her voice shook. She stopped to swallow.
It was right behind us at the waygate.
He escaped, and he did not, Moraine said. The black wind caught him, and he claimed to understand the voices. Some greeted him as like to them. Others feared him. No sooner did the wind envelop Fane than it fled.
The light preserve us.
Loyal's whisper rumbled like a giant bumblebee.
Pray that it does, Moraine said. There is much yet hidden about Padan Fane, much I must learn. The evil goes deeper in him and stronger than in any man I have yet seen. It may be that the Dark One, in doing what he did to Fane, impressed some part of himself on the man, perhaps even unknowing, some part of his intent. When I mentioned the Eye of the World, Fane clamped his jaws shut, but I felt something knowing behind the silence. If only I had the time now. But we cannot wait.
If this man knows something, Agomar said, I can get it out of him.
His face held no mercy for Dark Friends. His voice promised no pity for Fane.
If you can learn even a part of what you will face in the Blight, it's worth an extra day. Battles have been lost for not knowing what the enemy intends.
Moraine sighed and shook her head ruefully.
My lord, if we did not need at least one good night's sleep before facing the Blight, I would ride within the hour, though it meant the risk of meeting a Trolloc raid in the dark. Consider what I did learn from Fane. 3 years ago, the Dark One had to have Fane brought to Sheol Ghul to touch him, despite the fact that Fane is a Dark Friend dedicated to his marrow. 1 year ago, the Dark One could command Fane, the Dark Friend, through his dreams. This year, Baalzamun walks in the dreams of those who live in the light, and actually appears, if with difficulty, at Shar-al-Logoth. Not in his own body, of course, but even a projection of the Dark One's mind, even a projection that flickers and cannot hold, is more deathly dangerous to the world than all the Trolloc hordes combined. The seals on Sheol Ghul are weakening desperately, Lord Agomar. There is no time.
Agomar bowed his head in acquiescence, but when he raised it again, there was still a stubborn set to his mouth.
Aes Sedai, I can accept that when I lead the lances to Tarwyn's Gap, we will be no more than a diversion or a skirmish on the outskirts of the real battle. Duty takes men where it will as surely as does the pattern, and neither promises that what we do will have greatness. But our skirmish will be useless, even should we win if you lose the battle. If you say your party must be small, I say well and good. But I beg you to make every effort to see that you can win. Leave these young men here, Aes Sedai. I swear to you that I can find 3 experienced men with no thought of glory in their heads to replace them. Good swordsmen, who are almost as handy in the Blight as Lan. Let me ride to the Gap, knowing that I have done what I can to help you be victorious.
I must take them and no others, Lord Agomar, Moraine said gently. They are the ones who will fight the battle at the Eye of the World.
Agomar's jaw dropped, and he stared at Rand and Matt and Perrin. Suddenly, the Lord of Faldara took a step back, his hand groping unconsciously for the sword he never wore inside the fortress.
They aren't. You are not Red Aja, Moraine said I. But surely not even you would.
Sudden sweat glistened on his shaven head.
They are Ta'veren, Moraine said smoothly. The pattern weaves itself around them. Already the Dark One has tried to kill each of them more than once. Three Ta'veren in one place are enough to change the life around them as surely as a whirlpool changes the path of a straw. When the place is the eye of the world, the pattern might weave even the Father of Lies into itself and make him harmless again.
Agelmar stopped trying to find his sword, but he still looked at Rand and the others doubtfully.
Moraine said, if you say they are, then they are. But I cannot see it. Farm boys. Are you certain, Aes Sedai?
The old blood, Moraine said. Split out like a river breaking into 1,000 times 1,000 streams. But sometimes streams join together to make a river again. The old blood of Manetheran is strong and pure in almost all these young men. Can you doubt the strength of Manetheran's blood, Lord Agelmar?
Rand glanced sideways at the Aes Sedai.
Almost all.
He risked a look at Nynaeve. She had turned back to watch as well as listen, though she still avoided looking at Lan. He caught the wisdom's eye. She shook her head. She had not told the Aes Sedai that he was not Two Rivers born.
What does Moraine know?
Manetheran, Agelmar said slowly, nodding. I would not doubt that blood.
Then more quickly.
The wheel brings strange times. Farm boys carry the honor of Manetheran into the Blight. Yet if any blood can strike a fell blow at the Dark One, it would be the blood of Manetheran. It shall be done as you wish, Aes Sedai.
Then let us go to our rooms, Moraine said. We must leave with the sun, for time grows short. The young men must sleep close to me. Time is too short before the battle to allow the Dark One another strike at them. Too short.
Rand felt her eyes on him, studying him and his friends, weighing their strength, and he shivered. Too short.